we present the News Quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Hello and welcome to the News Quiz. We start with a cutting from Nigel Slater's food and drink column in The Observer, read by Harriet Cass.
I get through a lot of berries. A couple of good handfuls go into the early morning smoothie, then as often as not, turn up again in some form or another after lunch.
And our thanks to Catherine Law for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Jeremy Hardy and Sue Perkins. And opposite them on my left, Giles Brandreth and Mark Steele. Jeremy, have a listen to this. I give you an extra point if you know what that music is, Jeremy.
I don't, Sandy.
It's the Commonwealth Games anthem.
Okay.
With a few building effects. Jeremy, which sporting event might get off to a false start?
It's Commonwealth Games, and there's been interviews with rather desperate athletes all week. And what I hate about the news is there's never enough background, there's never enough depth in the analysis. 5,000 Indian villagers have been driven out of their home to provide a facility, and we're talking about the fact the cleaners might have left a floater in one of the labs. Sense of priorities, people, and we're supposed to be hosting it in Glasgow on a shoestring budget, and then we'll use the empty homes and just have Nintendo Wii's in them, which will save having to have an Olympic village at all.
Not a fan of sport, are you, Jeremy?
Not so much.
Where is the Olympic spirit? In the early days of these games, people ran naked around dust bowls. Why do we need these great buildings, bridges, and all that? We don't need any of that. We should just have a lovely field and people running hither and yon, and the rest of us standing around the edges being encouraged by the Duke of Edinburgh.
Ancient society, yeah. The games didn't have huge buildings or anything then.
Those big arenas and everything.
They were just fields and dust, and they stood around at the edges, naked, with Giles. A little chapati with some rice and some rather amusing sort of bits and pieces on the side.
In Athens.
Do you not think?
History Today with Giles Brandreth. In 300 BC, people used to stand around naked with chapati and rice.
I'm not interested in sport at all, but do you not think that they should make the Commonwealth Games prize something a bit more exciting? So whoever wins gets to run the Commonwealth.
Or a prize.
It would really give Guernsey something to play for, I think.
Well, I'm obsessed with sport. I love sport. But the Commonwealth Games, because it's a ridiculous idea, the Commonwealth anyway. It's just an artificial... They might as well have a Games for Country beginning with D or something.
Yes, Denmark is hosting it. I think it's absolutely...
exactly. But you'd still lose to the Dominican Republic.
Eagerly awaited start of the Commonwealth Games in Delhi is in doubt after the athletes' village was described as unfit for human habitation and a bridge to the stadium collapsed, forcing the pole vaulters to set up a gondola service. 2 points to Jeremy. Sue, who's cabled a firm message to the city?
Ah, yes, this is the Lib Dem conference, the orange tie-wearing back-slapping festival taking place in Liverpool. And Vince Cable has done... He's done his classic thing of you know, raising the roof and appealing to the crowd, the last great standing Liberal Democrat in a slew of kind of morally bankrupt, sad people clinging on to power.
Well, I think that the trick is with Vince Cable, because he's bigger on privatising the post office and cuts and that than even the Tories. So he's managed somehow to combine the politics and economics of Norman Tebbit with the sort of avuncular style of Mr. Kipling. And Mr. Cable does like exceedingly deep cuts.
But he's charming and northern. He's the man tasked with crushing the poor in their own accent, isn't he, really?
It's like Che Guevara, but with the added bonus of senior management experience in a multinational oil company.
Oh, the way they call him a Marxist and all that sort of thing, because he was mildly critical of the banks. Exactly, Che Guevara, that was his speeches, wasn't it, to his people? Comrades, we will one day maybe propose slight regulation on the bank, but they can ignore if you like.
It'll be interesting to see how they do next year once the local election results are out.
I'm guessing you're not a fan of the coalition. I don't know, it's a rough guess in the...
You get what you vote for.
People keep saying, well, this is what we have to do this. The Liberals keep saying, you know, well, we have to do this. We couldn't just let the Tories just flounder. And yes, you could. You could just let them form a government and vote against everything, humiliate them, let them call another election. Say, well, this is what the public voted. The public didn't. We didn't. There wasn't a box on the sheet saying, would you like a government where two more or less identical public schoolboys run the country together, where one is just the other one's bitch? That wasn't...
I like the way that, that the sort of leading Liberal Democrat people now all have to get up and make the speech where they say, I am proud that we are no longer just on the outside with no influence, and that now we are on the inside with no influence.
But I think it should be made clear that the Conservatives and the Liberal Democrats, they have not got into bed together, they are merely sharing a room.
Yes.
Twin beds and it's all well, though I wish it were a little bit more intimate than that. When I saw that wonderful ceremony that took place in the Rose Garden at Number 10 just after the general election, I just thought, this is lovely. This is a civil partnership that I can vote for. Those two gorgeous boys coming together at the podium, you know, in their slightly better than M&S suits with their matching but not exactly coordinated ties, that body language mirroring one another. I watched it on television with the sound turned down and my Judy Garland CDs on the back. This is
Giles.
What leadership does. I'm sorry, there's been a little bit of twitching in the chinos ever since.
Basically, Giles's Betty Both Ways credentials are flaunted at any opportunity he possibly can. The fact is, you've come here in a public place and said your chinos are tenting at the thought of David Cameron. That sweaty-faced Etonian. Is that what gets you
going?
It's
too early in the evening to be talking dirty, but I'm liking it.
Is there anything that doesn't arouse
you? I think this must be
you?
The only fetish in the world that there isn't a magazine that caters for.
There is. It's called the Daily Telegraph. I'm in favour of this coalition. You may be cynical. I want it to work for the sake of the nation.
Of course you do. It's the only reason you're in power.
But you're in favour of it for sexual reasons.
Name better ones.
Vince Cable used his speech at the Liberal Democrat conference to launch an attack on the spivs and gamblers in the city. Workers in the city were furious to be referred to as gamblers, although a couple were pleased after putting a few quid on the contents of the speech. 2 points to Sue. Giles, who might have to change his slogan from "Yes, we can" to "I would if they'd let me"?
We're talking about Barack Obama, the man who has realised that you campaign in poetry, but you have to govern in prose. And it's quite tricky doing that.
And why are we talking about him at this precise time?
We're talking about him for a number of reasons. He's been playing golf. He's been writing a children's book.
Yeah.
He's been lying low. He's been taking tea.
That is the sound, ladies and gentlemen, of arrows shooting blindly into the dark. Anybody else? Anybody know why he's in the news at the moment?
Bob Woodward's book.
Yes. It's not a children's book. It's a book by Bob Woodward.
Oh, him being exposed as being whatever he is.
That's exactly the kind of forensic answer we were looking for. It's like topical CSI.
I did think some of the stuff in that book, though, was extraordinary.
What is... Have you read it? I'm still finishing Tony Blair's book.
Why?
Because I'm reading it in German. I got it off Amazon. It's called A Journey in this country, but in Germany it has a different title, A Journey.
Mein Kampf.
No, in German it's actually called Eine Fahrt.
Is it?
So I haven't yet had time to get down to Bob Woodward's new book.
Yes, well done.
About Barack Obama, which has some extraordinary revelations. Just remind us of one or two of them.
2 points to Jeremy. Obama's Wars, a new book by journalist Bob Woodward, has exposed the deep divisions within the Obama administration, especially over America's goals in Afghanistan. Obama is said to be furious that he inherited two wars and a recession from George Bush, as well as an office chair fitted with a cup holder and a plastic tray. 2 points to Jeremy, then. Mark, who is saying that Asbos aren't up their street?
the coalition government is going to scrap ASBOs in and replace it with something else.
Do you know what it is?
I do know what it is.
All right.
I know. I think I know what it is. I think what it is is that there's some report that's just been produced by a special commissioner who says, in fact, what we're doing is we're neglecting actually the real problem, which is jobs in local communities and concentrating all our police resources on big crime. In fact, the real problem in society is being overlooked totally.
Right. Sue?
2 points.
Is it that the polis are saying that they have no need to be involved in the petty crimes and they are the ones that don't wish to enforce it?
It's actually the Chief Inspector of Constabulary.
That's what I said.
Sir Dennis O'Connor.
I mentioned that name, I think.
Don't you let him peck tea.
Does anybody know the actual answer?
Police can't be bothered to enforce ASBOs because they want to run around with guns being a bit mental, kicking doors in and saying, get your knickers on, girl, you're under arrest. And when it comes to actually trying to help the public, it's a bit dull.
Yeah.
It's basically that the police see tackling antisocial behaviour as beneath them. But we've always do things that are beneath us. I host this. Giles was a Conservative MP. I think there are lots of things that...
This is true. A lawyer told me that he was dealing with a case of a teenager who was given an ASBO for being sarcastic. And that was, and I thought, apart from anything else, a conversation between the police and someone arrested for being sarcastic would just go on forever, wouldn't it? Think it's clever being sarcastic, do we, son? Go on then, officer, arrest me for it. That'll keep the street safe. All night spending the night in a police cell, do I? Do as long as I'm in there with you and your sparkling wit, officer, it'll never end, wouldn't it?
Many people think that Oscar Wilde said sarcasm is the lowest form of wit, but he didn't actually say that. What he said was, oh, sarcasm, that's a very high form of wit. That is, I don't think.
Chief Inspector of Constabulary Sir Dennis O'Connor has released a report saying that police have been ignoring incidents of antisocial behaviour because they don't see it as real police work. Sir Dennis said that the public don't distinguish between antisocial behaviour and crime, adding for them, it's really a sliding scale of grief, which was, coincidentally, also the one-line pitch for EastEnders. So this is an extraordinary thing. This has never happened on the news quiz in my many years of experience. At the end of round one, the scores are Jeremy and Sue have got 8 points and Giles and Mark haven't got any at all. Round of applause for Giles and Mark. We start round two with a cutting from the Sunday Times.
Research has shown that people whose surnames have negative connotations, short, bent, little, etc., are especially likely to suffer feelings of inferiority, says psychology professor Richard Wiseman.
Our thanks to Natalie Curley for sending us that.
Is she short by any chance?
Jeremy, why could local authorities soon be virtually redundant?
Suffolk, the council, have decided to privatise all their services. There is a very good reason why some things are in the public sector. Social workers are not motivated by profit. They're motivated by a deep desire to help and protect disadvantaged people, albeit in a heavily patronising way. Now, yes, there are some things the private sector does better, things like coffee. When the railways were nationalised, there was one jar of mellow birds for the whole network and it was stranded at Crewe. So, if you turn up, if you get on a train thinking, oh, I'd have a cup of coffee, then you'll be pleased that the railways are private. If you're more concerned that the trains stay on those metal things that run along the grounds, you'll lean towards nationalisation. So, so basically, what's happening in Suffolk is they're going to privatise all this stuff and create havoc.
It's just basically going to be a website and everything is going to be outsourced, isn't it?
Yes. Do you think that Suffolk are just trying to impress us with these sort of sophisticated terms like virtual council? I mean, at the end of the day, they are just a small county that's just that bit too close to Norfolk for comfort. I mean, they're not really...
I was up in Suffolk a little while ago and I thought, I'm going to try and get the accent right if I'm going to do a show there, because you offend people if you don't get the accent right. And I was miles out with what I thought it was, because our Suffolk accent actually goes now is basically when we bought it was just a barn.
I
I used to know a bloke who was an East Anglian nationalist, he called himself. And I used to know how to wind him up. There was loads of times I'd say, oh, yeah, I'm going up East Anglia soon. He said, oh, is that right? I said, yeah, Colchester. And he'd go, mad. Colchester, it's not East Anglia. Well, two words, bloody East Anglia. East Anglia is Lowestoft, Alton Broad, Saxe, Mundham on a Wednesday, that's it.
Same Cornish nationalist. But I was on a train from Penzance where I used to live, and the line's always very sort of slow. And the announcement came on, we're sorry that the train's late, but they've got problems up in England. Some serious regional displacement going on.
The special nature of Suffolk is that everyone there is very close. It's really like one big happy family. In fact, I'm told it is one big happy family. I think this is the place we should... We don't need government anymore. I'm a closet anarchist, and I think...
What you seem to be a closet everything.
I think it's good.
But how's it going to work, then? How's it going to work, this virtual council? It's all going to be privatised. Is this going to be some marketing opportunity? Your children are being taken into care in association with Vodafone. I mean, how's it going to work?
I think the joy of this thing is we don't know and won't know how it's going to work.
I mean, it doesn't work now, does it? I mean, how is it possible? My local council, they have something like 27,000 employees. Not one of them answers the phone. How is it possible?
But you see, this is how you feel about your local council. Maybe we should just disband all these things.
Well, do you remember Barnet Council said they were going to have a no-frills public services?
Yes, it was called Easy Council.
Easy Council.
It?
Has anybody ever had public services with frills? Have you ever been? I don't know, do people go... I don't know, but do they go to the job centre and there's a maitre d' finding you a seat while you're waiting?
Giles, when you were a Member of Parliament...
Ah, yes.
Is this the sort of speech that you used to make in the House of
Commons? Oh, no.
You didn't get up and say, when the Speaker would say, Mr Brandreth, you didn't get up and say, oh, when I see Nick Clegg and David Cameron, they all shiffle and start twitching or anything like that.
It's different now. Now I can speak the truth. I can tell you that the one thing I really, really couldn't bear when I was an MP were my constituents. Let's face it, the people have contempt for the politicians. It is as nothing as to the contempt we have for you. All over this country, there are members of Parliament on their way to the Labour Party conference, coming away from the Lib Dem one, getting ready to go to the Conservative one, thinking, God, at last he said it. He said what we all feel. The happiness is the constituency in the rear-view mirror. So let's make it virtual. Let's make the whole thing virtual and have done with it.
Suffolk County Council has proposed outsourcing all but a few of the services it offers in order to make savings of over 30% on its budget.
Oh, wow.
I know.
How can it only make savings of 30% if it's disbanding everything?
Ah. What will happen to the 60% that's left?
Well, unions...
Oh, 70%.
60% is left.
70%. Wow. Ah, that's why I was so briefly at the Treasury.
2 points to Mr. Hardy. Giles, have a listen to this.
Do whatever steps you want if you have cleared them with the pontiff. Everybody say his own, Kyrie eleison, doing the Vatican Rag.
One of my favourite tunes, Tom Lehrer singing the Vatican Rag.
The genius that is Tom Lehrer. My dad, years and years ago, he was a journalist and he was based at the UN and he managed... This is how things have changed. You would never get permission for this security now. He managed to persuade the UN to let him put a white grand piano in the Security Council. And he had Tom Lehrer come in and sing his song about We've All Got the Bomb. Isn't that heaven? It's the most fantastic thing. He was a serious journalist, my dad, but he thought it was funny. And, Giles, who has cast the money launderers from the temple?
Ah, I'm at home with this subject. This is to do with the Vatican Bank.
Absolutely.
I have, since I got a euro account, I have one, genuinely, at the Vatican Bank.
Oh, right.
There is a Vatican Bank in Rome. You actually can go in there. It's wonderful. Water cooler, brilliant water cooler. You put your glass up, it comes out as wine. Everything at the bottom. It's the only part, frankly, of the Vatican City where they are genuinely not keen on the withdrawal method.
I'm waiting for a deposit joke. Here.
Yeah, it's going to be.
They've been in trouble because they've been spending their money foolishly, unwisely, wrong people have been getting involved. Things are in a bad state at the Vatican Bank.
Thankfully, the Vatican has a culture of openness. Mm. So, it'll all come out, I'm sure.
I think they're amazing because a lot of people, as they get older, become more right-wing. But this Pope is the only one to have managed that, having started out in the Hitler Youth.
He's a good man. He's a good man.
He's not a good man.
Look, there may be a next world. We don't know. If I were you, Sue, I would say he's a good man. Just say it.
Do you think if there is a heaven, that the basis on which you go either into there or down below is on what you've said on Radio 4?
This is the whole point with God. Attention to detail up there is extraordinary.
Yeah, but Giles, what you don't know is that when you get to the pearly gates, St Peter will be there and going, now, what you didn't know about me, Giles, is I come from Suffolk.
The head of the Vatican Bank, Ettore Gotti Terecci, and the bank's director general, Paolo Cipriani, are under investigation as part of a money laundering inquiry. The inquiry was launched after two suspicious transactions were reported to tax police in Rome. Someone deposited 5 loaves and 2 fishes and took out €23 million. Asking where the money had come from, Italian police were sceptical of their first line of defence. It's a miracle. Another religious, two religious questions in a row. Mark, which miracle was basically just a load of cold air?
Oh, we know.
Oh, yes, we know.
Oh, well, is this the guy who was beatified?
No.
Cardinal Newman? No.
Is it to do with Chris Moyles?
No.
Is it another thing about the Liberals?
It's the Red Sea.
Yes. Oh, the Red Sea! Oh, no!
I can't record it if everybody's talking on top of each other. So if Mark knows the answer, can you tell us what it is?
You can record it, come what may. You can't necessarily play it out, I understand.
Mark, which miracle was basically just a load of cold air?
Not saying.
Mark, which miracle was basically just a load of cold air?
Now, this, I would imagine, is the report that has come out that it is possible that the Red Sea, when it is deemed to have parted according to the Old Testament, did indeed part, but not because of a miracle, but because of a strange quirk in the meteorological climatic conditions that were circulating around Egypt on that particular day.
Well, 2 points to your team and no surprise there. A computer simulation has shown that the biblical parting of the Red Sea could have occurred naturally as a result of strong and persistent winds. Apparently, they think the crossing didn't actually happen at the Red Sea either. It happened at the Nile Delta. It's like the Bible was written by EasyJet. It was new. At the end of round two, the scores are Jeremy and Sue have got 12 points and Giles and Mark have got 4. Before we start round three, here is a cutting from the week.
A woman from Cheshire has won £35,000 in damages after falling down a drain at an event organised by the Health and Safety Executive.
And our thanks to John Guinea for sending us that. Jeremy, which BBC presenter has been present in the headlines?
Well, there's Chris Moyles.
So that's you get to put
known as Moylesy, which is a nick. People make up their own nickname by adding a Y to their surname if they're sort of hateful and on the wireless.
I've never listened to Radio 1 because of why would I? If you think that Mr. Moyles is quite annoying, you should listen to this Fern Cotton woman afterwards. She... Everything she says is, oh, it's amazing, it's brilliant, it's awesome. It's like listening to somebody who has never seen cutlery and showing them a spoon. Radio 1 breakfast show host Chris Moyles embarked on a 25-minute on-air rant on Wednesday, claiming he had not been paid by the BBC in 2 months. This has come at a bad time for Moyles. He's reportedly split up with his long-term girlfriend. He's having to sleep on a friend's sofa at the moment, and he's Chris Moyles. I'm just saying. Okay, so first one is Chris Moyles. Who are the other two presenters who have been...
Sarah Kennedy, is she...
Oh, yes, because she was... she wasn't drunk.
No, that's ridiculous. That's absurd. We're not even going to go there. No, she's not drunk at all. Well, one of them is John Humphreys. Apparently, the sound of BBC Radio 4 presenters, particularly John Humphreys, are being used to scare away deer in an allotment in Bedfordshire.
Ask them aggressive questions.
Yes. Well, does he say, so, dear, are you going to resign?
I like this. It said that the deer get particularly agitated in summer. You think, what is it? They keep wanting to switch over to long way for the cricket. I don't know what it said. And Andrew Marr? Anybody else on Andrew Marr? A truck carrying 15 tons of new books written by Andrew Marr overturned on a busy road, blocking traffic.
Do you know something that it is an urban myth, but quite possibly nonetheless true? Mills and Boon, obviously, was a sort of slew of Mills and Boon books published in the sort of 50s and 60s, and they were hugely, hugely popular. And there was no real take-up for them in the sort of 80s and 90s. And in the end, they were pulped and used as the subsurface to the M25.
I love that. We're driving over romance.
Exactly. You're driving over a million shattered dreams.
Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along, Mr. Hardy.
Sandy, this was sent in by Stuart Wigby in Oxford, and it's from the Daily Mail. A promise to end the penalty for all couples in the tax system has been watered down, so the government is now pledged only to bring forward plans to reduce the couple penalty in the tax credit system, a move which will mean it still pays some couples on benefits to live.
Ms. Perkins.
This comes from Psychology's magazine. It's a recipe from esteemed food writer Lindsay Barham. It's for a pear frangipane tart. The ingredients are 200 grams of plain flour, 3 tablespoons of cold water, 100 grams of caster sugar, 2 large eggs, 100 grams of ground almonds, a teaspoon of fine lemon zest, 200 grams of soft butter, plus a large knob.
Mr. Brandreth.
I spotted this on the BBC News website and was rather amused by the implications. In a study, this is a report of a study, in the study, men and women who each had 6 UK equivalent units a week or more significantly reduced their likelihood of pregnancy. For women, it cut their chance of getting pregnant by 18%, while men reduced their chances of a live birth by 14%.
Let's take a look at the final score. Giles and Mark have got 6 points, but this week's winners are Jeremy and Sue with 16. Before we leave you, here is a cutting from the Western Telegraph sent to us by May Paddington.
Driving school, over 85% pass rate. Thanks to the staff on Ward 3, Withybush Hospital, for all their support.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Jeremy Hardy, Sue Perkins, Giles Brandreth and Mark Steele. In the chair was Sandy Toksvig, and the news was read by me, Harriet Cass. The chair's script was written by Roger Crooks, Gareth Quinn and John Hunter, with additional material by James Keppel. The producer was Victoria Lloyd.